Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Stanley Cup playoffs roll on, and so does Live Laugh Leafs. Mike, it's cold enough for two sweaters today. Frankly, a little surprised and a little upset that you're not taking advantage of that opportunity.
You know what? I love the two sweater weather. It's my favorite time of the year. It's when, you know, I'm not a big pumpkin spice guy, but just love it. Now, what's weird is that it's getting colder, and yet you've reduced the amount of shieldage that your face has with your beard. I'm confused as to why the lumberjack men, they grow their beards out like crazy. You know, they like to, you know, bulk up for the winter, and you seem to have gone clean shaven. What's the deal here?
Well, for me, thermoregulation is a pretty complicated process. So if I'm adding more layers, I take them off in different areas, and that's probably the safest way to make sure that everything stays, you know, at a reasonable level for me.
Exactly. Yeah. You already have the two sweaters going on, so like you have another sweater on your face. I get it. Makes sense.
Too many sweaters. Two sweater max.
Is there a such thing as too many sweaters? In my opinion, there isn't. But who knows? It's up for debate. Who's to say?
I have no segue for that. So let's just jump into the games because I don't think anyone wants us to talk about sweaters any longer. I guess we can give a little recap of where we're at. Mm-hmm. Dallas took a 2-1 series lead over Vegas in their Western Conference Final, and the Tampa Bay Lightning own a 2-0 advantage over the New York Islanders. With their Game 2 victory, obviously Tampa and New York are up next, and then Dallas and Vegas will return for Game 4. So we'll start with Dallas and Vegas just because it's the most fresh series. And what we saw in Game 3 was a goaltending duel that was won by probably the inferior goaltender, but one who was certainly impressed during these playoffs.
I would say, yeah, like Khudobin was maybe the inferior goaltender throughout the entire playoffs, but he was phenomenal last night. He was, I'm pretty sure, I think it was, not Rick Bonus, sorry, Pete DeBoer described his performance as Demko-like, and I put that in our prep here too. Like he was phenomenal. Some of the saves he made, there was that great, you know, that great sequence on the power play, I think in the third period, when he just kind of slammed the door, and there was one right in front of the net with Riley Smith, where the splits, I didn't even know a human being could be that flexible. I can't even touch my toes from standing up. Like, can't even come close.
To work on that, man.
Oh, exactly. I got that mobility. It's not great. But with Khudobin, this guy, he's bending himself like a pretzel. It's crazy. I thought he was fantastic. On the other end, Leonard, he was great too. The goaltending duel here has made up for somewhat of a lackluster offensive output from an entertainment perspective, because the first game was a slog. Second game was a little more interesting. But this game, even though it was, you know, a 3-2 game, still relatively low scoring, everyone was, there's more than two goals in this game. It's fantastic. Both goalies really, really stepped up. It was really interesting to see. I loved it.
It was sort of the perfect, I mean, Robin Leonard was riding this ridiculous shutout streak. I don't know if it reached, well, they're only 3 years old, so it probably is on the record books for them, even though they played a lot of playoff games in three years. But it took this, like, kind of crazy sequence to finally break, you know, this deadlock between these two teams, which is Jamie Oleksiak on a breakaway scoring what was actually a pretty nice goal, pretty decent finish for the fact that he had, you know, one of these great goaltenders in front of him, but also Alec Martinez chasing him there. But yeah, you're right. I mean, Khudobin was just a little bit better, a little bit more spectacular. Frankly, it was a little surprising to see Robin Leonard get beat like through the body. Like on that Jamie Benn goal, he just beat him through the five hole. And it looked like Robin Leonard was basically impossible to beat unless you had a screen in front of him and you were touching it off the post before it went into the net. That's how well he's been playing in these playoffs. So it was a little surprising to see one go through him. Obviously, it was surprising to see Jamie Oleksiak score on the breakaway, but it was a little fortunate and a nice play by him. And then that last goal, I don't know if the end of the of regulation impacted Leonard coming into the overtime. But that didn't look normal for him to drop on one knee. He's usually a guy who just drops into the butterfly and makes himself as big as possible. And it looked like he was guessing on that shot from Radulov. And Radulov said his eyes were closed, so maybe he was guessing on where the shot was going as well. But it was a little surprising to see Leonard get beat, even though those were pretty grade A opportunities. It's just that Leonard's got to the point where it doesn't seem like he can be beat. So it's a little shocking, a little jarring when you see two goals that he potentially could have stopped actually going to the back of the net.
Well, A, that shot was fantastic by Radulov on the OT winner. Like it was gorgeous. I was watching I watched the game last night, but I was watching the highlights back this morning, and Ken Reed on Sportsnet said he wants to go on a date with that shot. And I agree. Sounds great. If that shot is open, please, my DMs are also open. But what was interesting is, so both goalies looked like they were battling injuries. Like it was a debate on whether or not they were both going to come back into the game for OT. Khudobin looked like he tweaked his groin a bit because he was just sprawling all over the ice. Leonard, on the other hand, I definitely think that, so he looked at in that final play where Nate Schmidt made the dumbest break or, dump out I've ever seen. Like it just, I don't know what he was thinking there. It was almost like he decided to throw it off the glass in a manner that would perfectly give it to, like, just dump the puck, man.
I think it hit a stanchion, right?
I know,
that was a hockey god bounce, because you just should have ate the puck at that point. But exactly. Throwing it off the glass and when it was so not required of him at all to get rid of the puck in that instance, I mean, he sort of deserved to get that lucky bounce, or that unfortunate bounce, I guess, for Vegas.
Exactly. There's 17 seconds left in the game, man. Just either like circle it back around the net or dump it. But it definitely looked like the shot. Who shot it? I think it was Patrick. Was it Pacioretty? I can't remember. Maybe Riley Smith.
Oh, which one?
In like the dying seconds of the game when Schmidt.
No, it was Jamie Benn.
Yes, sorry, it was Jamie Benn. Yeah, I don't know. Sorry, I'm all messed up here. Yeah, Jamie Benn. It looked like that puck hit like the inside of Leonard's knee. Like he looked like he went down. He was sprawling, and that definitely played into that OT winner. I think you're right. He was more hesitant. Leonard's a guy who likes to make himself as big as possible. He either stands his ground or he goes in the butterfly to try and cover up as much of the bottom of the net. And he just kind of was caught in that sort of middle ground where, what do I do? And he does the sort of one knee kneel, and he just got beat clean. It was a great shot, but I do think that the end sequence there, the fact that he was a little shaken up, was, that played into it for sure.
I feel somewhat responsible for Leonard giving up two, I would say, weak goals based on his own standard, but it's pretty understandable goals. But I feel somewhat responsible because I had just anointed him on Twitter, and we're doing the whole rehashing tweet things again, that he was the second best goaltender maybe in the world right now behind Andrei Vasilevskiy. He's at that point where he just looked unstoppable until all of a sudden two went in behind him.
Yeah, he was incredible. Like it's – both these goalies were fantastic. It was a great goaltending performance, and even though the game was 3-2, it was – it was great to see two goaltenders at the height of their powers. And my favorite is just we need to have a compilation, because it seems like it's happening more in these playoffs than it has in maybe recent others. And this could be recency bias here, but we need a compilation at the end of the playoffs of the disbelief reaction faces of every player who had a sure goal that they thought they were going to score before getting robbed. Because Demko could have his own in the three games that he played. But
Vegas could have their own running into Khudobin and –
exactly.
And Demko in these playoffs, for sure.
If Vegas can get through Demko and Khudobin, like I think that they would feel then that they could beat anybody. Like it's these are two of the most impressive goaltending performances we've seen, especially in these playoffs, maybe in recent years. And they're both, if they can get past them, that'd be fantastic. I mean, in terms of confidence.
And which has made Robin Leonard's performance so important, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they've ran in the past six games or so, they've ran into just elite goaltending. And Robin Leonard's played in five of those games, and Leonard basically hasn't blinked at all until the end of game three. He's been just as good or almost as good as both those netminders in each game. And because Vegas has been so much better than Vancouver and Dallas at points in the series, maybe not as much as with Dallas as they were with Vancouver, but it's basically just underscored how important it has been that he has been so good. It has been nice to see, or it was nice to see in that game that it opened up a little bit. I mean, it was really, game one was a drag. Game two was sort of one team just burying the other, and Dallas not really having anything to give Vegas in that game. But it seemed like it opened up a little bit. I mean, we actually saw forwards scoring goals, which you know, mm-hmm. I'll call that progress in this series. But I feel like this series can reach the next level based on, you know, we have all the characters present. We had a little drama where Vegas mm-hmm. has to chase a game, and they're the ones that can get 40 shots, but they're not the ones that can score 4 or 5 goals every game. And Dallas does have that scoring punch still as well. So I think it's going to open up a little bit. I think we're going to see more entertaining Game 4. And I believe it's going to go pretty long this series. And I think we deserve that.
Yeah, I think now we're starting to see these two teams in the way that they are meant to be seen. Like, now we're starting to see these teams with the players who we expected to perform showing up. I mean, Pacioretty himself could have had a hat trick this game. Like, it was like he was Vegas's leading scorer in the regular season. And he was able, he had 3 incredible chances. He just got stoned. You know, we have Riley Smith stepping up. Haven't seen too much of Jonathan Marchessault, but, you know, and then obviously Radulov and Ben and Penny Oleksiak's brother as well, scoring that goal. And that's how we will be referring to Jamie Oleksiak on this podcast.
Sure.
National hero Penny Oleksiak. But this is where we're starting to see these two teams being played the way that I think that we're meant to see them. Like it's still sort of lockdown grinding hockey, but at least like you said, it's opening up. At least there's a little bit more offensive creativity. There's more high danger chances. The play is going, you know, back and forth kind of at both ends. It's really interesting. And I was really happy to see, maybe not happy, but I was really interested. Happy, I guess, is the right way to describe it, that OT ended in 30 seconds, because that just goes.
I actually missed it. I was late coming back from the football game, and I missed it.
Come on, man. Yeah, it's rough. But no, it was like, in terms of how many like sort of slog, not slog, but long overtimes we've seen in these playoffs. It was nice for Radulov to get it and just absolutely snipe one 30 seconds flat like that. This was a game in terms of an entertainment standpoint. This was definitely a game that took a step in the right direction. It's baby steps, obviously, when we're talking about forwards scoring and as progress. It's a little interesting, but it was a good baby step here.
Now, you mentioned a bunch of different players there that were, you know, as potential X factors or players that we needed to see a little bit more from in order to see continued progress, but you didn't mention Mark Stone. Now, you have down here as a note that, what are Mark Stone's chances of winning the Conn Smythe? This leads me a little bit into it, a hot take that I have not brought to the masses on Twitter, but I don't think Mark Stone has been very good lately.
Really?
I think he can put together a little highlight of him, you know, taking the puck away from guys, but I think you could make a highlight of him losing the puck and some sloppy play from him as well. He only has, I think, 2 points in the last 6 games. 4 of those games are losses for Vegas. He needs to be better than he has been, certainly lately, in order for Vegas to actually, you know, score enough goals to win this series. I think a lot of it falls on him, and I don't think he's been very good in the last 4 or 5 games. I've been reluctant and reticent to say it because everyone's been giving him all this praise, and I get it, but I don't know. I don't think we can just get excited about him turning over the puck right now when Vegas' season is hanging in the balance, and he just hasn't held his end of the bargain from an offensive standpoint.
I mean, all right. That is a hot take considering everything that's being, you know, bandied about with him. You know what? You're right. Like, to be honest, the numbers haven't really been there, at least in the playoffs so far, but he just does so many things well. Like, he's such an interesting player to watch. He's such a, look, man, he's got 17 points in 18 games in the playoffs. He's stellar defensively. He's able to take the puck away from, like, there's compilations of him stripping the puck from people. I mean, yeah, like, you know, that's one thing, but that is so important in playoff games. And that is his ability to do that, especially in open ice, and just completely change the rate of possession, completely change the momentum of the play. It's fantastic. He might be a little slow right now, but I think that the things that he's doing away from the puck, the defensive ability that he has, he's just so responsible. Like, if I had a vote, I would have voted him in, you know, at least top 3 in Selke, in the Selke votes. Like, he's been fantastic. I agree that, like you said, offensively, it hasn't necessarily been there lately, and Vegas really needs that. And we talked about that in the last podcast on, you know, we're a little wary of Vegas' offensive ability, but in terms of wanting a player who in terms of finding a player who does everything you kind of want to see from someone in the playoffs, Mark Stone is right up there. Like, he scored last night, and he you know, I trust him every time he's on the ice. Like, he's fantastic. Mark Stone, like, Shea Theodore is obviously the Shea Theodore or Leonard are obviously the Conn Smythe favorites if Vegas wins the cup, for sure, or even makes, like, mm-hmm. makes the cup final. They've both been fantastic. Shea Theodore is having one of the most – Shea Theodore and Miro Heiskanen, we're kind of dropping the ball on the latter one there in terms of talking about him. But they're both – he's had a prolific Stanley Cup playoff run right now. But Mark Stone, just the little things he does, he is integral to this team's success. And I would at least consider it if they make it this far and he kind of gets on a bit of a run. Like, I think we need to bring up Mark Stone. I think that's why I put him in here. We need to talk about him.
It's interesting because I thought he did have that goal, but now I'm looking at the I'm looking at ESPN.com. They could be wrong, but it has him down for the assist on goal that Alex Tuch scored, or he scored.
Oh, what? I'm not sure. It was mucking in front of the net. I thought he
scored.
I thought
it went off Stone as well. But I mean, that doesn't matter. He was integral to that goal, but exactly. he was also integral. He was also integral to the Jamie Oleksiak goal. I mean, he was the one who had his shot blocked. He was the one who fell when he was trying to get back. And he was the one that sort of allowed Jamie Oleksiak to sprint forward. So I think if we mention that, we should mention his role in that. And I do think you're right. I mean, I think he's probably the forward that stands out. Mm-hmm. But Shea Theodore and Robin Lehner, I believe, are way ahead if we're talking about Conn Smythe Trophy rankings, at least with Vegas. And I think that goes back to the problem that I've outlined before with them, is I don't think they have a clear candidate for the Conn Smythe Trophy when looking at their forward groups. I don't think their forwards have been good enough. I don't think they've had a really outstanding performance from their forward group yet. And I think Stone probably leads that, but I still think Stone is leaving a little bit to the imagination. And I think that was underscored a little bit, especially on that Oleksiak play last night.
No, you're right. Like, it's been a little disappointing to see how little Vegas's forwards at least have stepped up. But then again, they're like we said, we've broken down how they play before. They play as a collective unit. You know, you want to be able to go through these three and four lines and not have a ton of variance between them. Like, in, you know, we talked about Ryan Reeves coming. Like, Ryan Reeves is back, and he's played a great part of that. Like, he's not going to be nominated for the Conn Smythe at all, but they play differently when he's on the ice. Vegas is deep. They might not be top heavy as some teams are, but they're deep, and they are going to need a lot of their forwards to step up. Another thing that I noticed is, although he got an assist last night and, you know, he's doing okay in the playoffs this year, but I haven't seen a ton, like, he's got 8 points in 18 games. I haven't seen a ton from Tyler Seguin. Like, he's supposed to be, imagine, we're talking about how Dallas has had this offensive resurgence, this offensive renaissance after struggling in the regular season. And yet arguably their most lethal offensive player, at least, just has essentially been nowhere to be seen. Like, Tyler Seguin, he's supposed to be their guy, and I haven't noticed him at all.
No, I'm waiting for their owner to, you know, call an impromptu press conference and fire them up, at least on the Seguin front. I think Jamie Benn has certainly stepped up, but
yes.
Seguin certainly has not met expectations in these playoffs. I don't think he's been at that level, even through, you know, we're in the third round now, but maybe at the start, he wasn't quite there. The points might be there a little bit early on, but they've certainly dried up. And I don't know if he's, you know, battling some sort of injury. We've seen sort of some clips of him wincing and so on and so forth. But, I mean, we can still say that they're going to have to get Tyler Seguin going to get through to the next round and win the Stanley Cup. But they're now two wins away from moving on to the Stanley Cup final. So maybe contributions from Seguin, at least on a goal-scoring front, aren't necessary when guys like Radulov and Benn are stepping up and you're getting that production from Miro Heiskanen and you're just getting sublime goaltending from your backup, Anton Khudobin. So, you know, he doesn't have to be that superstar player for them or that superstar forward that's filling the net, but he could certainly give them a boost, that's for sure.
You know what's being lost in all this too is that both of these teams are playing with coaches that they didn't start the season with. Like, that's mm-hmm. Because it's just being, and the Gallant firing was quizzical. Like, it didn't make any sense to me. But this isn't being talked about enough. That we both have these two teams who switch coaches midseason, are battling out, and are arguably the two most, well, I wouldn't say the two most formidable teams left in the cup final or in the playoffs, because obviously Tampa, I think, is above both. But they're both remarkably structured, and this is a remarkably even series. And we have one coach who has the interim tag still on him. Another one who was hired mid-season in DuBois, not DuBois. that's kind of gone under the radar. Like, this is pretty remarkable that these teams are looking as good as they are with having, you know, this complete sort of having to essentially change everything midseason.
Yeah, I think it says a lot about the roster construction on both sides. I mean, Vegas firing Gerard Gallant was a shock to pretty much everyone who wasn't, I guess, really in tune with what's going on with that team.
As because, is every Gerard Gallant firing.
Exactly. I mean, Gallant had just, you know, less than 2 years removed from Coach of the Year, taking an expansion franchise to the Stanley Cup final. But clearly they knew that they were a better team than they were showing. Yeah. And they identified a really talented coach in Pete DeBoer, a guy who has brought two teams to the Stanley Cup final in his first season with those organizations. So knowing that they had a candidate out there that they could get that was just fired from a rival who they really trusted his ability. I mean, it says more. I think the fact that they're having success says more about the fact that they built a good roster, but also had the courage to make a decision to, you know, to change coaches only to make, you know, maybe even slight improvements. I think it might be larger than slight improvements that they've seen under DeBoer, but you know, they're not settling. They didn't become complacent because they had some success early in their 3 years. But I think first and foremost, both these organizations build good teams, and DeBoer and Bonus are certainly capable guys who have had success, one at the head coaching level and one as a longtime assistant who's been around the league for a long time.
Yeah, no, I just thought it was something that we haven't really talked about that much, is that the two teams in the Western Conference Final are teams who had relatively unexpected coaching changes. And like both of them came kind of out of nowhere. The Jim Montgomery one was due to personal reasons. And then
certainly, yeah,
Gerard Gallant came out of nowhere. And that could have been a bombshell to any kind of team in the middle of the season, not even mentioning the pandemic that happened after that. And now they're in the Western Conference Final and duking it out. And it's as even a series as there has been, really. So it's really, I mean, it's remarkable that both of these teams have been able to forge ahead.
Let's transition to a series that is not even at all. Tampa Bay is up 2-0 over the New York Islanders, and they've done it two different ways, which I think is the most impressive thing from the Lightning. Obviously, in Game 1, they had that 8-2 beatdown over, you know, the excuses came in with the Islanders being a tired team that, you know, had to travel and one day's rest and all that. But then they were able to implement their game, which was basically they dragged Tampa Bay into the mud. It became a little greasy. There were some nasty hits. There was some nastiness. And a lot of things went down that basically sucked the life out of the game and sucked all the talent and energy out of Tampa Bay. But they still, with 8 seconds left, were able to produce a moment of pretty decisive offense with Ryan McDonagh setting up Nikita Kucherov for the game winner with, as I mentioned, 8 seconds left. So winning two ways, important. You have to win multiple ways to win a series, but doing it right off the bat is probably something that's probably, you know, the frustration is going to set in with New York, because yeah, they could probably, you know, get over the first one because it was anomaly, or they could at least tell themselves that it was anomaly, but to actually have success and still be beaten the way they were in that really, you know, just sucks the life out of you when you lose in the final seconds like that. It's got to be pretty disheartening for the Islanders, who obviously need an even better effort to get within a game of this series, but this one could certainly be over or very close to over after game three, because Tampa Bay just looks like the far superior team.
Yeah. I just hope that a lot of like columnists get their Lou Lamoriello, you know, getting nominated for GM of the Award puff pieces out before his team gets exposed in the playoffs by playing an actually good team, because they built a team and it's coached really well, obviously by Barry Trotz, but Lamoriello built a team that is supposed to play sound defensive hockey, bore teams into victories, et cetera, et cetera. And the most high-flying, arguably the most high-flying offensive team in the league, just beat them at their own game. So I think that is a stunning, that should be a stunning punch to the face, like a punch to the gut, really, for this team. Because they pride themselves, like, look, the first one, like you said, they can say it's an anomaly. We were not rested, and Tampa just was able to take over the game right off the hop and whatever. But now when you're playing a team that, you know, you're supposed to have the edge when it comes to defense, you're supposed to be the more structured, you're supposed to be the team that is able to sort of batten down the hatches. And Tampa still beat you. And they beat you playing that style of hockey. You dragged them into the mud and they still came out victorious. I think that is a testament to show just how shaky the Islanders are from a roster construction standpoint, because Yeah, look, they're great at doing that. They're great at playing that sort of old school trap hockey that that Lamoriello, you know, from the days of yore that he loves so much. But they really didn't play like the most legit teams coming up here. This is the first really good, I would say, elite team in the playoffs that they faced. And they've been beaten in essentially the two most damning ways you can be beaten in the playoffs, which is getting the doors blown off you and then also getting beat in a sound defensive hockey game. I think this is, like, you're talking about the panic and frustration. I think it should be, you know, it should be a five alarm fire. It should be DEFCON 5 or whatever in their dressing room right now, because it's like, what do we have? What's our counterpunch here? This was their counterpunch and they lost.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we're learning is, and what we have learned and what we probably suspected, was that the Islanders are just a high-level gatekeeper.
Yeah.
They have this, you know, high floor, low ceiling thing where they're, you know, a test for all teams, but a test in which elite teams can overcome and teams that aren't for real can't overcome. They're pretty much just locked into exactly what they are, which is gatekeeper status. And the Tampa Bay Lightning, unlike the Philadelphia Flyers, unlike the Washington Capitals, unlike the Florida Panthers, are a legit Stanley Cup contender. And I don't think there's any reason to suggest, unless they run into a pile of injuries and suspensions and different problems, that they won't be able to get over the New York Islanders or the high-level gatekeeper. But there is problems because Braden Point picked up an injury. Alex Killorn picked up a suspension. Mm-hmm. That left them with 9 forwards in the game, which made things a little bit more tricky for Tampa Bay, and it didn't really matter in the end. But losing Point, who is a legitimate Conn Smythe Trophy candidate.
Oh, okay.
That was a bit much.
Okay. All right.
Moving on. legitimate Conn Smythe Trophy candidate. That just felt mean coming out
those
of
those are fighting words right there.
Those are fighting words. But Alex Killorn is not that, but he is at least one of the 11 guys that was getting chosen by John Cooper. And if you're losing him for Game 3, and potentially are without Braden Point for Game 3, that means guys like Carter Verhaeghe and Mitchell Stevens are coming in, and that, like, you know, the no dip in terms of where you are with your forward lines, you're not seeing a drop-off at all. There's a drop-off in talent, but a drop-off in at least value at every position hasn't been there for the Lightning in these entire playoffs, even without Steven Stamkos not around, mind you. Mm-hmm. But I think you're inviting some other guys into this series. Maybe the Islanders can create some advantages for themselves if Braden Point is not around and Alex Killorn is not around, at least for Game 3. So we can talk about the suspension for Killorn. It's just one game. I thought he should have just got off with the rest of the game that he did serve Game 2. I think we've seen a lot of hits like that. I think Kotkaniemi's was probably the closest, and I think he got away with just, you know, missing the remainder of that game. But yeah, I think it's an opportunity for the Islanders, just not confident they're going to take it.
Yeah, this is, I mean, as it's easy to say, you know, this is a must win, because clearly if you go down 3-0 in any series, it's basically, you know, curtains. But the fact that they're already missing Steven Stamkos. So this is even the Lightning at their full power. Like, this isn't even their final form. Then Braden Point is arguably their most important forward. I wouldn't say arguably. Him and Kucherov are probably neck and neck. But Braden Point, in terms of the position he plays, he's the most important forward. They could be missing him for pivotal Game 3. And then Alex Killorn, yes, he's, like you said, he's not a Conn Smythe, you know, nominee, but he's an important part of that top six. he's gone too, and that suspension was ridiculous. There's so many different, there's so many hits that have been worse in the playoffs that have gotten off clean, and he also served part of the game. He served the rest of the game. That should be the penalty enough. Like, he already basically missed half a game. Now they're suspending him for one and a half. Ridiculous. But yeah, the Islanders, like, if it's easy to say, if they don't take this opportunity and run with it and at least get a game in here, then the series is over. It's easy to say that because a 3-0 series deficit is basically, you know, curtains. But yeah, like the point still stands. They need to take advantage of this. They need to take advantage of a beat up team. They already couldn't take advantage of a team that was down to 9 forwards, but they need to take advantage of a beat up team that is missing two important forwards immediately from their last game, missing one of their most important forwards for the entire playoffs. They're shorthanded. They're going to put a bunch of young guys in the lineup in a playoff game, in an Eastern Conference final matchup that, you know, the moment might be too big for them. So they need to take advantage of this. They need to be able to play their game. And they showed that they couldn't do that with a team that had 9 forwards left at the end of the game. They surrendered a buzzer beater goal, which is supposed to be the antithesis of the way that they play hockey. So look, the Islanders, like, this is as do or die as it's ever been for them. And if they don't, then we basically don't even have to watch the last game 4, because we know how it's going to go.
Lightning are 10-2 in these playoffs. They've won 4 games in overtime, 1 in 5 overtimes, 1 in the second overtime.
And domination.
Probably consider Kucherov's goal overtime. So half their wins have been tight, but they are 10-2 in the playoffs. This is, I mean, we've seen teams, I mean, they have got a long way to go, obviously. I think we've seen a team. Did the LA Kings only lose 2 games on their way to a Stanley Cup one?
The LA Kings, I think in the year that they finished in 8th, like they were the last seed, their first cup, I'm pretty sure. Was it 20?
Yeah, they just dummied everybody.
They just went in and they steamrolled. They ended the Canucks, and then it was 2012, I'm pretty sure. They steamrolled everyone. It was remarkable. But yeah, Tampa Bay, this is they're in another tier to any other team that's in the playoffs this year. They're remarkable.
They've faced teams that are supposed to frustrate them. Like, this hasn't been – it hasn't been, oh, we're going to just flex power on power, fight fire with fire. They've had to face the Blue Jackets, Bruins, and Islanders, which are 3 teams that are supposed to frustrate a team like the Tampa Bay Lightning, and it hasn't been frustrating at all. It has been clean. Yes, they've had 1-1 series in the previous 2, but they rattled off 3 victories to close it out in 5 in both the previous series, and I would be surprised, frankly, if this one goes 5, because the Tampa Bay Lightning are just on another level. It's not quite the LA Kings of 2012. It could be, though. But I think they're gonna meet a good team, whoever comes through in the Stanley Cup final. But I think we're both pretty confident that New York just does not have what it takes to beat Tampa Bay.
Yeah, if I could pick 3 teams that would, maybe not from a talent perspective, but at least from the confines of a playoff series, give Tampa the most trouble from the way they play, it would be Columbus, Boston, and the Islanders. Just in terms of how they all play sound defensively, how they're all kind of steered towards, like I said, battening down the hatches and muting the kind of game that Tampa thrives on, muting that high flying, you know, fire wagon type of hockey. They all kind of play the antithesis of that. And Tampa has steamrolled through all of them so far. Like, they are dominant, and they've shown. It's not so much even that they slayed their demon in Columbus. It's that they've slayed 3 teams that were sort of built to negate the kind of hockey that they play. And they've barely broken a sweat. It's remarkable. Like, if I'm Tampa, and this might be something that, where they can sort of – they can, and they've done it without Steven Stamkos, which is remarkable in its own right. But if I'm Tampa, like, yes, you know, you might be missing, you know, Point and Kucherov – or not Kucherov, Point and Kloren in this next game. But why would you not have all the confidence in yourself that anyone can come into this lineup and still be great? Teams have been, every roadblock that's been placed in your path has been designed to eliminate you. And you've done nothing but steamroll them and barely had to, like, you're jaunting through a farmer's market. It's remarkable. So yeah, good. They should be feeling themselves more than any other team right now. And I don't think that this sort of, yes, it's an opportunity for the Islanders to come in and see if they can take advantage of a shorthanded team. But Tampa, like, if any team should be believing in themselves right now, it's them. I don't think they should be fazed by this at all.
3 teams that should be able to at least frustrate them from an offensive perspective, and yet they have 43 goals in those 12 games. That's good for 3.5 per. That's going to get it done, especially when you have Andrei Vasilevskiy in net, Tampa Bay are looking and feeling good right now and probably should be favored to close this thing out in four games, but we'll see where we get there. Let's move on to news and notes.
Yeah.
We only got two series, so we can devote a little bit more time to what's going on with the rest of the league and all these teams being angry that the Maple Leafs are making deals. We will see deals at the draft, which has been moved up October 6th. October 6th, what is that, a Tuesday? Why is the NHL draft going to be on a Tuesday?
Is it Tuesday?
Wednesday, same thing.
Wednesday? Yeah, I don't know.
Why is it not happening on a Friday is what I'm getting at.
I don't know. But I think they're thinking, you know, everyone's still at home anyway, like as much as they should be. They're taking advantage of the, you know, they're taking advantage of the moment. Like it on a Friday, maybe people are out more, but on a Tuesday in a pandemic, there's no other thing to do than watch TV, right? So I think that's kind of what they're trying to capitalize on.
It is Tuesday, and I'll tell you what they're doing. They found one of, I guess, 3 days during the week that do not have NFL football being played.
Yep.
I guess they want to avoid the Saturday because there's other things going on Saturdays, obviously. So if you have your draft on a Tuesday and Wednesday, you might be able to steal some viewers. And that, I assume, staying away from the NFL is the only reason why they've pushed the draft up to October 6th. I'm fine with that. Leaves Thanksgiving weekend open. Maybe we can take some time off. And we won't have to, you know, discuss what type of sweaters we chose for the holiday.
I'm cool with that though. Like I would love to do that. It's all, yeah. Like I said, like it makes the most sense because yes, you're not going to run into the NFL on Friday or Saturday, but people are still, even though we're in a pandemic, people are still doing things on those days. It might not be, you know, like people are not sitting down on their couch just watching, but in the middle of a week, Tuesday, it's not even hump day yet. No one's going out on a Tuesday. Like Vine would say that the club is going up on a Tuesday, but it's not really, not in a pandemic. So at least they're going to be maximizing eyes. They don't have to clash with the NFL that essentially owns 2 days of the week. It makes sense.
October 9th, which means it's a Friday for free agency beginning. I don't think it'll be as entertaining as noteworthy as the draft. I mean, there'll still probably be the all day, you know, television production that we'll probably all be watching. Mm-hmm. But it won't run in line, I guess, with potentially, you know, NFL games and other action that's going on. The NBA obviously could be in its NBA finals at that point. So there are going to be a lot of other things going on. I think it makes sense for the NHL to just try and slide that draft into a time slot that might draw some eyeballs. We can move on with this, but I want to just give a quick prediction from you. Will the Leafs use the 15th overall pick?
I think they will. Actually, no. I think I don't know. In normal circumstances, I'd say no. Because there's been a lot of rumblings that they might trade it. And also Kyle Dubas loves to trade back. But man, the 15th pick in this draft, like this draft is so deep. I don't know if you want to give up a pick that high in this draft. Even though you can maximize some in the lower end, I think 15th is still high enough where you can get a really good player. It's close enough to the lottery where the talent separation between, you know, maybe 1 to 15 and then 16 to 31 is a little, it's a little more pronounced. I don't know. I'm gonna say yes, but I wouldn't put a lot of money on it, but I'm gonna say yes.
It could be used to land a goaltender because one of the top free agents at that position, if they are looking to replace Frederik Andersen, was supposed to be Robin Leonard, but apparently Robin Leonard and the Vegas Golden Knights are interested in an extension. And some people speculating that they already have it done, but they're not going to announce it until, you know, after the postseason or when they are ready to announce it. It's rumored to be 5 years at $5 million per, which sounds like an absolute bargain for the Vegas Golden Knights. I mean, I think Robin Leonard, you know, all power to him. He's a guy who seems comfortable in Vegas and in that role and with that organization. And happiness is more important than chasing every last penny you can possibly get. But I believe he could probably do better than 5 years at $5 million per on the open market because, as I mentioned, I believe he's at the very top of the game in terms of netminders. But that likely means he's not an option for the Maple Leafs. The number one goalie would be off the board in free agency, so all the other teams would be searching for maybe Plan B. I guess your reaction on that marriage, what it might mean for Marc-Andre Fleury and what it might mean for teams that are looking for goaltending help this offseason.
Well, it makes sense from a Leonard standpoint. I mean, yes, he's definitely giving up some dollars. I mean, that's an incredible contract. 5 years at $5 million per for maybe a top two goaltender in the league right now. Incredible. But Leonard has long said that his main priority is term. He wants stability. He's bounced around on one-year contracts, mainly due because I think a lot of organizations with his, with the struggles that he's had in the past are wary of committing to him that much. And it's disappointing in that sense, but I guess when you're looking at a bottom line perspective, you have to do that. So term is his number one priority. $5 million per, look, it's still $5 million in a pandemic. That's fantastic. And also this organization clearly believes in him. They brought him in and they've now put him in a position to be a starter over who was arguably the franchise face in net. He wants someone to commit to him. And he said that many times before. And given how the contract negotiations ended with the Islanders, where Lamoriello essentially just walked away from him after a Vezina nomination season, I mean, why wouldn't he? Times are as uncertain as possible. We don't even know what the next season is going to look like or when the next season is going to really kick off. So why not in a city that has clearly adopted you, with an organization that has shown that you're a priority to them, if you play well, you are going to, unseat anyone, even our first ever draft pick, our the best guy in the locker room and our number one, franchise face, you're going to be over him. Yeah, just lock it down. He clearly wants stability. He clearly wants, and he's still getting a decent payday. Why make things more complicated? So yeah, lock it in there. In terms of taking the number one goalie off the board, all that does is raise Jacob Markstrom's dollar, because Leonard was going to be the most hotly sought after goaltender on the market. I mean, he was, the Leafs were rumored to be in on him. A million, Edmonton was rumored to be in on him. There are a lot of teams that are rumored to be in on Robin Leonard. And if he sticks around in Vegas, then I would say, yes, there's a deep goaltending market, but the sure thing, the only real sort of sure, he needs to have a bounce back, or, if he can defy father time. No, like the only elite goaltender currently who's going to hit the market is Jacob Markstrom. And I think that essentially means that the Canucks aren't going to be bringing him back, because he's going to be commanding way too much. And I think that means some team is going to be dumb. Some team is going to give him too much money in too many years. And it's going to be another, it might not happen in the first year, but we're going to be looking at another really, really cavernous goaltender contract. So I'm really interested to see what happens here, because essentially that means you had two nominations for the prom king and queen here, and then one gets taken off the board. You're essentially the belle of the ball.
I think it supports Frederik Andersen's chances of coming back to the Maple Leafs, just because one of the guys that everybody's going to be chasing is going to be off the board, and that might make Andersen a little bit more desirable to teams that are still looking for that goaltending help. I'm not sure how the Leafs can improve their goaltending, or at least makes it a little bit more complicated for them to try and improve their goaltending while giving up Frederik Andersen. It is interesting that, we made a big deal of the Montreal Canadiens having about $14 million or close to $15 million devoted to their goaltenders with the addition of Jake Allen. It'll be $12 million for the next two seasons if Leonard signs and Marc-Andre Fleury doesn't move. I could see Fleury moving, but I could also see, them having to retain the salary on it, because who is going to go out and trade for Marc-Andre Fleury at $7 million? I don't think I just don't see it happening, to be honest.
If you can convince Fleury, first of all, I would 100%, the fact that even with Fleury and Leonard on this new deal, they'd still be paying less than Montreal is paying for their goaltending is hilarious, because I would, any day, 10 times out of 10, take
what Leonard's making,
Leonard would make $5 million.
And Jake Allen makes what, just over four? So only $1 million more for Robin Leonard as opposed to Jake Allen's.
4.35.
Oh, God. So insane. It's crazy. Yeah.
But yeah, if you can convince Fleury to stay, because Leonard has always been, he's never been like the clear cut number one during his most successful years. He's always played in the 50-ish game range. If you can convince Fleury that yes, you're not going to be the starter, but you're going to be our 1B. You're going to split it sort of 50-30. You're going to kind of go in that direction. That would be money well spent. And that would be just such a formidable tandem. Like, that would be incredible to just have those two. And if you can convince Fleury somehow to accept that role, kind of like when the Raptors were like, look, we got Marc Gasol, so Serge Ibaka, come off the bench, be great, and it worked. I mean, if Fleury wants to win another cup, if Vegas doesn't win this year, if Fleury wants to win another cup, this is his best chance to stick around, to play 30 games, to be the good teammate he's always been advertised as, and to potentially, like, look, Leonard has dealt with injuries in the past. He's a relatively injury-prone goaltender who has never had a full season of being a full starter, a full elite season of being a full starter under his belt. You could potentially step into that starter's role too. I think that the internal competition between them, again, if the attitudes align, would bring out the best in both of them. That Vegas could be sitting pretty in net for the next little bit, at least for the immediate future.
I mean, yeah, if money wasn't a factor, obviously it would be a boon to have both of them. It'd be amazing. But this is a team that, you know, while their salary cap situation is pretty settled, they would have to make some changes if they're going to add Robin Leonard at $5 million, because I think he only makes a little over one right now based on their books, because there's money retained with the Leafs, right?
That cap hit too. Like, the Leafs laundered that draft pick.
Exactly. So, you know, it could mean changes. It could mean that, hey, things are a little bit more important now this season because we got to make sure we win one of these championships. I know Bill Foley is the pressure's on from him because he wants to win one as he's getting a little bit older. He wants to win one as soon as possible. And I think that they're just going to have their foot on the gas pedal as much as possible. But it is going to be harder to maintain your team if you're paying your goaltenders in excess of $10 million. In this case, it would be $12 million. But for Leonard, that's $5 million. You know, he might be leaving a little bit of money on the table, but it's tax-free in Vegas. I don't think he'll be complaining about locking up $25 million in salary when his career was, you know, we didn't know if there was any direction to his career 2 or 3 years ago.
It's, you know what, their cap position isn't, like, they wouldn't have to make as many changes as you'd think. Like, they really...
I don't think it would be decimated, but I mean...
No, it wouldn't, because even as... something. As it stands right now, heading into the offseason, they have 4.941, like, they have basically $4.9 million in cap space at the moment. And Leonard would be five. And their only real, the only real UFAs or RFAs they have to re-sign are Nick Cousins, Chandler Stephenson, Thomas Nosek, John Merrill, and Derek Englund, other than Robin Leonard.
Who they're not going to sign.
Exactly. So, like,
it's, no, I don't, not decimated, but you want to improve, right? You want to keep getting better, or you're getting worse. So, Chandler Stephenson would command a couple million for sure.
Yeah.
I think they'd probably move on from Nick Cousins or pay him just a little bit. John Merrill, Derek Englund's probably gone. Thomas Nosek, they'd want to give a couple million too. So, there would have to be changes. But again, if you're not adding, you're subtracting it, mm-hmm. these days, at least.
But at the end of the day, if they win a cup and they solidified that goaltending tandem, like, yes, you would, you know what, essentially it basically confirms that Marc-Andre Fleury is not going to be a Vegas Golden Knight moving forward. I really think that as much as they don't have a ton of finagling that they have to do, and it would be great to have that tandem together. At the same time, it is a deep goaltending market. Like, you could go out, they could sign Anton Khudobin, you know, like, who knows? Yeah. Like, and no matter what, even on the open market, like, even if he commands the same amount as Leonard based off this, it'd still be less than what they were paying for this tandem together. So I think the best course of action, like, as much as I would love to see that tandem together, and I think that both their personalities work really well in terms of bringing up the best of each other, the money-wise, like, the reason why everyone's talking about this deep goaltending market is because you could essentially get, like, a serviceable backup for really cheap. So if you want to lock down on Leonard and then go out and get a Khudobin and do that, you know, 50-30 split and save $2 million opposed to what you'd be paying otherwise, go for it. I mean, it's, yeah, but Vegas, they're sitting pretty happy. Like, they have all their they have their core locked in pretty much consistently moving forward. So it wouldn't, if they wanted to keep that, it wouldn't be too much finagling.
No, I mean, I think, yeah, you're seeing, you're making concessions if you're having a backup goaltender make $7 million. I think those are just the facts in a salary cap era. Would they be better off retaining 50% of his salary to get rid of him? Maybe not, because he's still a capable goaltender that can play 40 games and can play every game if something happens to Robin Leonard. But you cannot waste money nowadays. I don't care how good you are. I don't care how, you know, locked in your core is. I don't care if you don't have to make any moves. If you're wasting money, then you're doing yourself a little bit of a disservice.
Especially in a flat cap.
Especially in flat cap. There are 17 NHL teams that have reduced staff pay during this pandemic. Speaking of money, apparently the Ottawa Senators, naturally, have reduced the most. And the Leafs are the only team that have not reduced staff pay, which also seems to make all the sense in the world, given the two different financial situations that Ottawa and Toronto just have to exist with. It says something about the Leafs, obviously, that they're not making those concessions. It says that they are very rich, which they are. But it also says that, hey, maybe they have an advantage here because they're going to be able to go out and spend money and continue to funnel every resource they have into making their team great next season and beyond, while other teams are really hurting in the post-pandemic era.
I think it means that the Leafs are going to, in terms of like maybe James Myrtle covered this in his mailbag today, but it really does make sense, is that look, MLSE is owned by Bell and Rogers. Like, it's a split Bell and Rogers majority ownership there. And all we've been seeing, at least from Sportsnet's side, is record ratings across the board from this broadcast, record ratings from the postseason coming in here. They're able to still make money. And so when your ownership is still being profitable during a pandemic, which isn't the same for a lot of these teams. Some teams are owned by casino magnates who are taking a huge hit, you know, other hotel industries, all that kind of stuff. But the Leafs are still making money. And so it also goes to show that they could win a one-for-one, you know, budget-related trade. Like Frederik Andersen, for example, he only makes $1 million in actual salary next year. So not only that, but now Leonard being taken off the board potentially. If they want to sell on Andersen, I mean, I don't know about Dubas's reputation for commanding big prices. That might get in the way. But man, that's going to be – some team is going to overpay like crazy if they end up moving, because they have all the leverage now. They're still making money. They're in a position where they don't have to cut any staff pay, whereas, you know, more than half the league has been able to do that. And their most attractive trade chip only makes $1 million in actual salary moving forward. Yeah, I think that this puts them in a great position for a blockbuster trade potentially on draft night, on that hot Tuesday that we're gonna be watching.
Who says the Leafs don't have any advantages? I don't expect them to run up an energy bill in their own arena this summer or this offseason.
I'm just waiting for which team is going to complain about this. Which team is going to go to the NHL and be like, oh, the Leafs aren't cutting any staff pay. That's unfair. We demand them.
I think some teams would be, at least the Ottawa Senators fans, would be a little disappointed if Mark Borowiecki walked, you know, down the 401 to the Toronto Maple Leafs this offseason. I think you heard some rumblings.
I've heard rumblings.
Is there chatter?
There is.
Are tires being kicked?
Okay, let's not get too ahead of ourselves there.
Let's wait till October 9th.
I can't think of any other analogies there.
Either way, I think that would be an ideal move for the Maple Leafs. If they could get a guy like Borowiecki short salary, a guy who can, you know, play those basic minutes is what we're looking for. Basic minutes on that third pair. He's a right shot, I believe.
No, he's a left. He's a lefty.
He's a left shot. Okay, yeah. I guess it's not as
There's
perfect.
There's no spot on it for him.
Not as perfect, unless we could just, you know, move on with the fact that everybody has to be right and left based on what they actually shoot. But he is the type they need. Let's say that. They need a guy on that right side who can do Borowiecki things, a guy who can be not only an asset on the ice but inside the room. You hear nothing about great things about his attitude and what he brings to the Ottawa Senators. I guess it hasn't translated to many wins in recent seasons, but he was a guy who's played a role on teams that did go on, you know, postseason runs. So to me, he's the guy that makes a whole lot of sense. I don't know why the Senators are letting him go, because it's a young team that sort of needs that direction. And if he's all that he's been built up to be, certainly he would still provide value, even though he's on the twilight of his career. But he makes a lot of sense to me for the Leafs, you know, if in a perfect world he actually shot with his right hand.
I wonder if these rumors are actually tied to him going out the door, because I'm assuming that these rumors are tied to a lack of conversations between the two sides on a new contract. But that can make sense, because now buckle up for this. The Sens, in terms of pending free agents, the Sens have Scott Sabourin, Connor Brown, Matthew Peckett, Chris Tierney, Jace Howerlich, Rudolph Balcers, Nick Paul, Anthony Duclair, Ron Hainsey, Andreas Englund, and Craig Anderson all up as potential free agents this year. They have four forwards that are under contract for next year and four defensemen. So it could just be that he's not at the top of their priority list in terms of contract talks. But if they really are, now I've heard like rumblings that, you know, this is a legitimate like exit. I've heard people say he might not actually, at least from his side, that he might not be coming back to the Sens. this boggles my mind. Like, the Sens are not going to contend next year. They have a great team, but they're not going to contend. And Mark Borjecki is like a real life superhero. The amount of stories that I've heard about him just being the best human being on the planet are immeasurable. For example, a producer, great Twitter personality, Justin Morissette, he's in the hospital right now because he tried to defend someone against homophobic attacks, and those people broke his leg. And Mark Borjecki like called him in the hospital and had a conversation about what rehab is like and fighting the mental demons of rehabbing to rehabbing from a serious injury. And this guy is based in Vancouver. I don't even think he really has a ton of connection to him, but Borjecki saw the story going around on the news and called him. Like, he's a remarkable guy. And when you have a ton of young players who are coming up in your system, you want to set, like, the biggest thing that all these general managers talk about is, oh, we want to reset the culture. We want to build a good culture. What, like, he seems to be probably the best person that any organization can bring in to set a culture. And the Sens have oodles of cap space. And yes, they're not going to spend to the cap, but there's no way he can command ludicrous amounts of money. He's a left shot defenseman who's coming off, I think it's an 18 point season. Let me just check that to make sure. Like, he doesn't have great underlying numbers. Yes, that's true. But
he plays for the Senators.
But he plays for the Senators, yes. And he logs 60% defensive zone starts. Like, the guy gets the most ridiculous usage. It seems like a no-brainer that they should be bringing him back on like a two-year, $2.5 million deal or something. And yet they're pinching pennies with him. It just doesn't make sense. He seems like the kind of guy who is worth he's worth the dollar figure just from what he brings to the locker room alone. He's one of those guys that whose intangibles, rare people whose intangibles are actually worth the price of admission for him. So the Senators are trying to shoot themselves in the foot before they can even really get started. I don't get it.
Maybe he just doesn't want to be mic'd up and put in a room with Eugene Melnyk.
He had to sit through that and they're not rewarding him for it? Come on, man. You were held hostage.
I mean, he seems like the perfect guy that would be like forever with the organization and always getting a paycheck, but that would mean the Senators would have to, pay more than 12 people to help run their franchise.
Exactly. And they have like 12 people up in free agency right now. So it's just, they're a weird franchise. I don't know what they're doing.
I still maintain that I think he'd be a perfect fit for the Maple Leafs. Maybe Travis Dermott goes in a deal. Maybe there's a lot of things that are going to be happening, a lot of movement, and he's a guy who could slide in for a nice price and give you more than he would provide just on the ice and potentially in a third pairing. One more news and note, Paul Fenton joining Bill Zito in Florida. You have written down that somehow the worst GM in the history of the NHL can still get a job in the front office in the salary cap era. Okay. So that's a clear distinction you want made, and that's fair. And you also have written down, will Florida ever be good again? Maybe not with Paul Fenton, but you know what? He's a guy who had some success as a scout. And if he's just scouting and not managing people, he might not be a complete liability.
What just boggles my mind here is that this is like, it's supposed to be a new era. We're supposed to be, they fired the hockey man. They're in Dale Tallon, they're supposed to be going and building a new front office. And one of their first hirings is, like I said, the worst general manager of the salary cap era, whose failures in a 1.5 season span birthed the greatest piece of sports journalism, I think, in recent memory, of the Michael Russo, essentially. And the thing is that it was the greatest sort of a teardown of anyone I've ever read, at least in hockey. And there was no malicious intent with it. It was just listing all the things that Paul Fenton did. Now, you're right. A lot of those happened to be his failure in managing people. So if he is a supporting role, if he's just a scout, that's fine. But not only is Paul Fenton joining Bill Zito in Florida, the Wild let his son out of his contract, and that and is now Paul Fenton and his son are joining Bill Zito in Florida. So it's just the nepotism. Like, you might as well have just kept Dale Tallon. This is a Dale Tallon move. It just boggles my mind. Florida, this is supposed to be a new era for them. And their first move to really shore, or one of their first moves to really shore up that, to shore up their front office, their new look, moving into an era of front office, is hiring Paul Fenton and his son. It just goes to show that you can be, like I said, the worst general manager in the salary cap era, who mishandled his one shot at being a general manager so poorly that it bred it. it bred a piece that rivaled, no, that surpassed any reality television I've ever watched in my entire life. And I'm a big Bachelor guy, and it surpassed anything on that regard. You can still get one of the most coveted jobs in sports, just a job in the NHL front office. That should show you anything about what the NHL is right now. You could fail as hard as you possibly can in as quick of a timeline as you possibly can have, and still land on your feet. It boggles my mind.
I wonder how awkward the office culture was for Paul Fenton's kid in Minnesota after all that went down.
Go read the Michael Russo Paul Fenton piece. It is just a jewel of journalism, and it probably will answer that question because I can't go through it now. It's just incredible.
So Russo was right about Fenton. Not sure he was right about the Capitals, who are denying the fact that they were just in the Toronto bubble to party. But that's a conversation for another time, because we'll leave it at that. Live, laugh, leave. We'll roll on into the Stanley Cup final soon enough, but we'll probably have a show before these third rounds are over. We're expecting big things from one and the other to be over pretty quickly here, but I think Dallas and Vegas still has that potential to entertain us before we get to the Cup final, and then that Tuesday where we'll be doing our virtual draft and just hiding from the NFL like the NHL always does and probably always should do.
Hell yeah.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.